Now it's time for another edition of the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
From the political side of the Nobel Prize to some unlikely familial bonds, it's another big week in politics. So far, Al Gore shows no signs of interest in taking his laurels to the presidential trail, but that has not stopped those in the know or wish to know from talking about it. Yesterday, there was a special election for the U.S. House in Massachusetts. Iowa Republicans set the date for their caucus, and leading Republican candidates head to Washington on Friday and Saturday to state their cases before more than 2,000 Christian conservatives at the Values Voter Summit. And, of course, there's the curious case of the distant cousins. NPR's political editor Ken Rudin joins us to feed your habit, as he does every Wednesday. And how do you think the Nobel Peace Prize changes the race for the presidency? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And we have a trivia question for this week. Everybody remembers that three U.S. presidents received the Nobel Peace Prize. Who's the only other vice president to win the award? Email talk@npr.org. And Ken, before we get to the political implications of the Nobel Peace Prize, there were people actually casting votes yesterday.
Where is that? Oh, yes, in Massachusetts' 5th Congressional District. It was a special election. Marty Meehan, longtime Democratic incumbent, left to become the chancellor of the University of Massachusetts at Lowell. But it was interesting because the Democrats have won this seat forever. As a matter of fact, the last Democrat to lose it, trivia question, was John Kerry back in 1972. Democrats have held it ever since. Paul Tsongas, the late Paul Tsongas, held it for two terms before being elected to the Senate. And his widow, Nikki Tsongas, was elected yesterday, but with only 51%. Of the vote, Republicans are trying to make the case that it's a sign that good things are about to come for them in 2008. That's questionable, but the point is it was much more narrower victory than the Democrats would have liked.
And will her politics mimic her husband's?
Well, she's always been, it's not that she's one of those stay-at-home wives. She's always very involved in her husband's campaign. She was very active in a Senate race and his presidential race when he ran in 1992, lost the nomination to Bill Clinton. It's one of those races where Republicans were trying to paint themselves as the outsider. Now, the Republicans have been in power for so long in the House, but Jim Alganowski, the Republican candidate whose brother was pilot of Flight 11 on 9/11 that flew into the World Trade Center hijacked plane, he tried to paint himself as the outsider as opposed to the insider, Nikki Tsongas, who had the endorsements and the campaign visits by Nancy Pelosi, Bill Clinton, people like that. Mm.
In other news, we may start to see finally the beginnings of the primary and caucus season set. The Iowa Republicans have named a date for their caucus, January 3rd.
Well, it's unbelievable. And the fact is we still have like about 80 days to go. And these are a lot of candidates who are trying to figure out what they're doing, when and where to buy ad time. And here it is, with 80 days to go. And the Republicans yesterday announced that they're in Iowa, that they're going to have their caucuses on January 3rd. It had been set for the 14th, I believe, but because everybody else is moving up earlier, Michigan already moved theirs to January 15th. Iowa, of course, wants to be first in the nation, has been since 1972. Republicans say they're going to have it January 3rd. Democrats haven't acted yet what to do. It's very interesting what's going to happen because given the fact that, we have a lot of candidates whose future rests on what's going to happen in Iowa, obviously John Edwards on the Democratic side has put so much time, so much money into Iowa. Joe Biden said the other day that if he doesn't finish in the top four in Iowa, he's gone. Now, nobody has ever finished fourth in Iowa and gone on to win, although it should be pointed out in 1988, both George Bush Sr. and Michael Dukakis both finished third in Iowa, won the nominations. But again, it's just so much uncertainty, and this should not be the way we decide who the next president the United States is going to be.
Here's an email question that we have from Tony. With the Democratic primaries being piled on top of one another, thus minimizing the momentum effect, what's the chance that no candidate will reach the convention with a majority, thus leading to an open convention on the second ballot?
The ultimate political junkie fantasy. Of course, that has not happened for any party since 1952. The Democrats, Adlai Stevenson, was nominated on the third ballot 1952 convention. In 56, it took three ballots for them to come up with a vice presidential nominee, but Every convention since then, it's always been on the first ballot. Ultimately, I think that whoever, if somebody wins Iowa, New Hampshire, which is, we saw that in 2000, 2004 with Gore and Kerry, you win the first two, you go on to an easy early domination of the nomination process.
At the end of this week, a great pilgrimage by Republican candidates here to Washington, D.C.
It's the Values Voter Summit in Washington. And, of course, on the Republican side, that's an important issue, given the fact that many, and we've said this over and over again, many religious conservatives have questions about their candidates. And to start with Mitt Romney, who, when he ran for the Senate and governor of Massachusetts, was pro-choice, pro-stem cells. Rudy Giuliani, of course, has always been known as a pro-choice Republican mayor of New York, a pro-gun control mayor of New York. Again, he has to expound on his views. And a lot of conservatives don't trust John McCain as well, because he has, by supporting campaign finance, it basically limits free speech. And a lot of conservative groups feel that that's not the way a true conservative would vote.
So the conservative side, we've had several guests on this program from conservative parties and movements, and saying, look, we haven't embraced anybody this yet. But that was before Fred Thompson got into the race.
That's true, and that has changed absolutely everything. No, actually, wait. It's changed nothing. Fred Thompson, the supposed savior of the Republican Party, has not really made the difference. We've only seen him in one debate, and maybe there's a chance that he can come up with a great change, something that will change the dynamics of it. But the fact is, here we are in middle of October, and we still have, in the national polls at least, and again, plenty of time to go, but the fact that we have Rudy Giuliani, the pro-choice, pro-gay rights, liberal almost, well, at least he was a liberal when he was mayor.
On social issues,
absolutely, as the front runner, and that's pretty remarkable. And that's what's fueling the concept of perhaps a third party or an independent candidacy if Giuliani is the nominee.
But our main question this week is, how does the Nobel Peace Prize change the dynamic of the Democratic presidential race? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Don't forget our trivia question, too. Who's the only other vice president to receive the Nobel Peace Prize? And joining us now to talk about this, not necessarily the trivia question, but Doug Hadaway is with us. He was national spokesman for Gore's campaign in 2000, now president of Hadaway Communications, with us by phone from Boston. Nice of you to be with us today.
Good to be with you, Neil. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Neil. Hi, Doug.
And so the question that former Vice President Gore has not yet conclusively responded to is, do you think you might get into the race? It's not too late.
I think it is kind of too late. On this whole thing, it's a very well-deserved honor, but I think he will actually take advantage of the momentum to continue pushing for action on the climate crisis, not to run for president. As you all well know, running for president is a massive undertaking. It takes a national organization, millions of dollars. It's really not something you can just, quote, jump into, even if you have a national profile like Gore. And the second reason, I think, is that unlike the Republicans, the Democrats seem pretty happy with their field of candidates. There's been a very robust draft Gore movement out there, but frankly, I think most voters are focused on the current field, and they pretty much like what they see.
Well, certainly on the fundraising side, doesn't the Internet change that dynamic? We've seen candidates being able to raise a lot of money very quickly.
That's true, and I think Gore certainly would be well positioned to benefit from that. On the fundraising side, that's definitely an area of opportunity. Internet is a source of what we call smaller donations.
Mm-hmm.
Your major donors, I think most of them are already in the game. I bet you there's quite a few who sort of held out to see what Gore would do, but I think Labor Day was probably sort of the cutoff time for a lot of people.
Doug, it would be interesting also, given the fact that the top two Democrats at this point is a woman and an African-American, it would be an interesting signal if Gore would suddenly get in and try to obviously show disdain for those kind of candidates.
Sure. I think there's a lot of excitement around Senators Clinton and Obama, no doubt about it. And, I agree. I think Al Gore would be a great candidate, be a great president, all that, but I just don't think he's going to do it. And I think the time has passed in this race for him to get into it, and partly because I think the people are coalescing around the field. There's been a lot of talk this week, obviously, about recent poll numbers showing Senator Clinton up over Obama 30-something points nationwide. The picture is a little more mixed, obviously, when you look down, particularly at Iowa, down in some early states. But it feels like people are, you know, they're, like I said, happy with the field, and I don't know that there would be a lot of movement away from your current candidates.
I mean, I think there's no way in the world that Gore runs, but my email box has been filled for months now, for people who are still upset about what happened in 2000. Do you think that we've seen the last of Al Gore as a potential candidate? down the road?
Yeah, Amy asked this in an email question. Might Mr. Gore be speculating for a run for 2012 or 16?
He very well could be. I haven't sort of parsed his statements to see what doors he's left open. I think it's sort of pretty clear for right now that if he were entertaining ideas of running now, he would have taken some concrete steps before now to actually do that in terms of, you know, raising money and setting up an organization, that sort of thing. But I think that's actually, you know, a door that is wide open that he could do it later. He's not, you know, by presidential standards, you know better than I can, he's still a bit of a spring chicken. He could run later in life.
We're getting some answers to our trivia question, including this one from Tim in Williamsburg, Virginia. Is this a trick question? Teddy Roosevelt was a former vice president as well as president who won the Nobel Peace Prize. He is correct about Teddy Roosevelt being a former vice president who got the award, but he got it for something he did as president, which was settling the Russo-Japanese War. He is not the answer to this week's trivia question, so we'll continue talking about that. Stay with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is George. George with us from Chicago.
Hello there. Hello?
George, go ahead, please. George, go ahead, please. George, go ahead, please. All right, never mind. George, are you there? Last call. All right, never mind. I think he was suggesting that if Al Gore is not going to run for president this year, does he have a more powerful position, not just on the environmental issues, but on other issues, health care, other things, to influence the race? What do you think, Doug Hathaway?
I think so, actually. He has quite the platform on environmental issues. Of course, he came out very early against the Iraq war and the direction that the Bush administration was taking it anyway. So I think he's got credibility on issues beyond the environment. And I think he might see that he has a way to shape what the issues are that are on the table leading in the presidential election, and could also be in a very strong position to work with the next administration, particularly on the environment. If I'd appoint him, you know, roving ambassador on global warming or something, have him renegotiate the Kyoto Treaty the right way, something like that.
Ken?
Do we think an endorsement from Al Gore might make a difference? He made a very heralded, high-profile endorsement of Howard Dean in 2004, and that went nowhere.
Yeah, I wonder. I think that sort of shows you where endorsements go. That said, this year seems to be a little different in that there is a draft Gore movement, and people are really focused on the environmental issue in a way that they weren't then. And that I think he's probably maybe got more people, cultivated more of a base, if you will, of people out there who might take his lead.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. Good to talk with you.
Doug Hathaway, a former national spokesman for Gore's campaign. That was back in 2000, and currently president of Hathaway Communications, with us on the phone from Boston. And let's see if we get a caller on the line. And this is Tyler. Tyler with us from San Antonio.
Yes, that's right. How are you doing, fellow junkies?
Very well, thank you.
I've got a question. I'm a former political activist, and what really intrigues me is this special election up in Massachusetts. I know that typically the Republicans, being the challengers, want to make a good showing and try to get some momentum there and make a statement. But I'm wondering, is this something that we're going to see later during the general election? Is this, prophetic of the populace being a little dissatisfied with Congress?
Well, the Republicans certainly hope so. As soon as the election results were in last night, the NRCC, the Republican Congressional Committee, sent out a release saying that, you know, this is a sign of things to come, that the public, and polls show this, that the public is very unhappy with the Democratic Congress, although I suspect it's more about the Congress and so much the Democratic part. And, but again, the Republicans also point to the special election last year when Duke Cunningham resigned from California. He went to prison for corruption. The Republicans, who had won that seat by 25 points in the past, barely squeaked by in a special election, and the Democrats tried to make the point that this was a sign of things to come, that the Republicans are in trouble. As it turned out, they were correct, but I still suspect that this may be an isolated incident. I don't see any pro-Republican trend in congressional races at this point.
I agree. I'm just wondering about these poll numbers that we keep seeing about the president being lower than ever. Congress is being lower than ever, but I never really see the data on, are they dissatisfied with Republican Congress or are they dissatisfied with the Democratic leadership?
Well, there are polls that show that if you had a choice to vote for Congress now, Democrats still at this point have higher marks than Republicans.
All righty. Thank you, guys.
Thanks very much for the call, Tyler. We do have a winner, two winners, in fact, to our trivia question. Both Timothy and Ryan correctly said Vice President Charles Gates Dawes of 1925, recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. Of course, three American presidents as well. Teddy Roosevelt, we mentioned, Woodrow Wilson, and, of course, James Earl Carter.
And right, and then Dawes later wrote Light My Fire, which very few people know that.
That is, in fact, a political trivia question. Indeed. Ken, we can't leave without commenting on the news that it was discovered by genealogical researchers that there are relations between Senator Barack Obama, of course, one of the leading Democratic candidates, and Vice President Dick Cheney, not a recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, I mean, the relations we've always heard are always interesting. I mean, we always know that Al Gore was the father of the Internet, but Lynn Cheney announced on, I guess it was MSNBC, that Dick Cheney and Barack Obama are eighth cousins or ninth cousins once removed, and it's a fascinating bit of genealogy there, right there.
Yeah, okay. That's going to go a long way for American politics,
don't
you think?
I'm going to stay away from that, yes.
Okay. Ken Rudin, thanks very much for being with us. The Political Junkie joins us every Wednesday here on Talk of the Nation. You can also read his Political Junkie column at npr.org. And he does a podcast every week called It's All Politics, and you can download that also at our website. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I'm here in Washington. Where else?
Yeah, I'll make you glad you got me in with everything I do. And I'll defend until the end the old red, white, and blue. I want to grow up to be a politician. And take over this beautiful land.